Richard Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique. Never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Wednesday, everyone, and welcome to Richard Skipper Celebrates. Now, if any of you are in the New York area right now, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and on down the Eastern Seaboard, you're being blanketed in snow right now. There's a huge snowstorm going on outside these doors. So if for any reason that we do lose power during tonight's show, we will do this at another time. But I am very, very excited about tonight's show. For those of you who are coming back, thank you for being here. And for those of you who are here for the first time, my show is about celebrating artists and their body of worth. Now, I'm not alone in that celebration. Our guest tonight, Joey Lober, with the Broadway Mentors Program, is also all about celebrating the next generation. And as a matter of fact, I had to pull a few strings to get her on the show tonight. Joey and I, she's one of the gifts that I have received this year. Getting to know her, and we've had many long heart-to-heart discussions, and she's all about her, this wonderful organization and the great work that they are doing. And we were talking the other day, and I said, Joy, why don't you come on and let's talk about your life and let's talk about the work that you're doing. And she didn't want to talk about herself as much as she wanted to talk about the great Broadway mentors that we're going to meet and talk about tonight and all the great work that they're doing. Now, I, as I said, I'm all about celebrating artists and their body of worth, but she walks the walk and she talks the talk. Now, before I bring Joy on, I'm going to show a brief video here of the work that she's doing with these great kids. Sit back and enjoy. And on the other side of the video, if the power is still on, you'll meet Joy Lober.
I'll find wings of my own to lift me up, to help me find my way, endless sky where I can fly to a place where I don't have to hide from the truth that lives inside, a truth.
Well, Joy, here you are. Finally, we made it.
We made it. That video just made me cry watching the kids.
I was watching you in the video before you came on, and I see how much it moves you. I want to address the obvious before we go on with the show tonight.
Sure.
And that's the fact that we are in the midst of this crazy pandemic that we've been through. Broadway theaters tonight is, are you ready for this? 279 days since our theaters have been shut down. And I want to ask you, and I know that you and I talk a lot, you've been so passionate with this organization and the work that you've done with it and creating this. But how are you doing, really, in the midst of all this?
I feel very fortunate and very blessed that I'm able to, I've been sequestered since March because I am a woman of a certain age and probably best I just have my groceries delivered and I wipe them down with Lysol and I have my kitty cat. But I've been very blessed that I have been able to keep just about all of my voice students. So I'm dealing with teenagers every day and kids every day and watching them grow and watching them actually have breakthroughs. There's been something about doing classes online that have actually brought us a little closer in a strange way because as a voice teacher now, I can really see what they're doing with their tongues where I'm not just like right down, you know, breathing down their throats. It's also been very good for the students because what happens is as a mentor, as a teacher, and you know for yourself, Richard, with your voice teachers and your acting teachers, those that I trained with always took a more organic look at my life, not just my voice, not just my acting, but what was going on at home. And my kids, I call them my kids, even if they come to a master class, they seem to want to open up to me. So I'm kind of like grandma, which is awesome because I have no grandchildren yet. My daughter's watching, but we won't go there. So in answer to your question, I get up every morning excited to work with the students, but also to help forge the Broadway Mentors program and now the new foundation, Broadway Mentors Foundation for the Performing Arts, where we're trying to get some donations so we can have people, kids, adults who are not able to financially afford our very, very affordable Broadway Mentors program, but yet things are very tough. So every day, and by the way, the program is basically run by my daughter and myself, my daughter Tracy, who put that video together.
Wonderful.
Breathing down her neck, of course.
Joy, we are getting just a touch of feedback. So if you could turn your speaker down a little bit, that will alleviate that a little bit.
Sure. Hold on. Let me do that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
So technically, oh, here we go. You tell me if this is good. Testing, testing, testing.
Good.
Testing.
That's better. Yes,
testing, testing. Is it better? Okay.
Yeah, we
might be able to hear you too.
Of what's going on outside tonight as well. So that may have a lot to do with it. But we're going to get through this.
Okay. Was that better?
Is
that
better? Oh, it's much better. Thank you.
Good. So back to how I'm doing. I keep a really strong regimen. I get up. I have my breakfast. I get on my stationary bike. I throw the laundry in. I do the dishes. And then I go to work. And before my voice lessons or acting classes that I teach, I'm working on Broadway Mentors and dealing with the wonderful, incredible Broadway stars who reach out to me and talk to me about the students and their classes and made very close friends since this, you being one of them, Mr. February 11th and on February 12th.
My birthday is the day before hers. And we have, I'm sure our lives have passed in a previous life. They had to.
There's no question. I feel that everything that's happening right now, for those who want to stay in the positive, if they, it's like allowing the goodness to come in and the blessings.
I think that this is the time for everyone to think about what we had, what we have, and what we desire in our lives.
Yes.
And I think about that every single day.
Yes, I think that it's very important to think about what we have rather than what we don't have and dwell on that because this too shall pass.
We're coming
around the corner, and if people will just stay patient and diligent,
and follow the protocols.
Oh, please, please. Yeah. I mean, I only go out to take the trash out, and I wear a mask and gloves, so I'm a little bit over the top.
Someone asked me today, our mutual friend Jeff asked me today, he says, how are you doing? I said, I'm busier than I've ever been in my entire life, but I'm a recluse. My husband, Danny, many of our viewers know him, he goes out and he does the shopping and does all that he needs to do. And I pretty much have been sequestered myself since March.
Good. Oh, me too. March. Since March.
So as I asked you, I mentioned earlier that today marks 279 days since our theaters have shut down. Right. What did your calendar look like on March 11th before everything began to shut down on us?
Well, we have a studio in Somerville, New Jersey, where we do master classes, my voice lessons. We also are going to be teaching instrumental training, but we also have a recording studio. So we were very busy. We were working with Jeffrey Lesser, who is the music producer for 13 the Musical and Tick, Tick, Boom. And he was coming down and teaching classes to the kids on how to record in a studio. It's very different than performing because you have earphones on and it's a whole different animal. And we were very busy, and it came to a screeching halt. I was at the studio one day, hugging the kids, hugging the parents, and the next day the doors were shut. So, I think one thing about artists, we're kids at heart, and so as soon as one door is shut, we kind of go, okay, well, let's do this. Well, what about this? And that's how the new version of Broadway Mentors out, because we're doing online classes all over the world. We just did a master class with Telly Leung in Japan. We have a wonderful interpreter who's an actress. And we had a student on from China who stayed up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do the class. And we have a lovely young lady in the UK who's been taking master classes and working privately with Donna Keckney on one-on-ones. So the world actually, Richard, has opened up. Because of COVID. Before we had our studio and we would do master classes in New Jersey or we would do them up at Pearl Studios in New York. But kids and students in Indiana couldn't get to have the opportunities that they have now with working with our Broadway Tony Award winning stars. You know, Donna McKechnie and Ellis Ripley and Anthony Crivello and it's Howard incredible. Howard McGillin. We're going to be doing a podcast. I think you know about this where I shouldn't say anything, but we're doing we filmed it, The Three Phantoms. We have Howard McGillin.
Can I say that I got to see the preview of it and it's amazing.
It's amazing.
And I couldn't even share it. It's just so incredible.
It's so incredible. So it was Howard McGillin, longest running Phantom in the history of Broadway. Anthony Crivello, my dear friend of over 30 years from Evita. I worked with him in Evita, who did the Las Vegas company for 6.5 years. And the darling Ron Bomer, oh, he's so sweet, who did it in Los Angeles and in the National. And there, it was like a mutual admiration society. And once we get this podcast up and going, it's going to be, I think, so inspiring for the students to see what the camaraderie is in the industry and not the competitiveness, because it is about competing.
I learned about all of them. I'm getting a lot of feedback. I don't know why when I speak, but I got a lot of knowledge that I didn't know. I don't want to say anything because I'll give away too much. You have to watch this. But I want to go back for a bit, if you don't mind. And then we're going to come right back to all the work you're doing now. When I was 13 years old, growing up on a tobacco farm in South Carolina, I'm going to share a little story about myself, if you don't mind.
No, I love it.
There was a wonderful, I got involved with a theater company called the Theater of the Republic. And the fairy godmother of the theater was a wonderful woman named Florence Epps. I actually have a photograph here of her at the Pasadena Playhouse.
Oh, look at that.
This was her. But she took me under her wings. She had a playhouse in her backyard. And I used to go to her playhouse every Wednesday or Thursday. And this was long before there was such a thing as Google and looking things up the way we look things up online right now. But what she would do is we would have a lesson. And as we were doing the lesson and a name would come up, for example, let's say that she said Howard McGillin at that time. And if I didn't know who they were, she would say, tell me three things that they're known for. And if I didn't know, she would close the book and she would say, I'll see you next Wednesday. Know who they are.
Oh, because I love it.
She taught me that every time I stepped on stage, every time I step in front of the camera, in front of an audience, that I am carrying with me the mantle of every great artist that has ever gone before me. Mm-hmm. And I truly do believe that to this day, I still remember that. And you also have this incredible legacy that you bring to your school and you bring to your students. And I know you don't like to talk a lot about that, but I'm going to talk about this for a moment because you had an amazing career. You were, was it Miss Pennsylvania?
I was Miss Philadelphia. It wasn't my favorite thing to do because I felt very self-conscious. It was with the Miss America pageant, so it was more about the talent. I did not like parading around in a bathing suit. I did like the evening gown part because that was fun getting, you know, but back then my evening gown had like kind of a chiffon turtleneck and it was flowy and that was pretty. But yes, I was 17 years old and I had just done a summer stock show and someone saw me and they said, would you like to? It was a scholarship program and I needed the scholarship as well, but I had a little problem feeling so I would have preferred to sing and act than parade around.
What were you able to do that show?
I'm sorry?
Did you perform as part of the pageant?
No, I didn't get as far as the Miss America pageant. Again, I was 17 years old, and when the final question came, I think I was a little too honest. I think you were supposed to say things that maybe I should have been coached, and I wasn't. And I said the truth, you know, and they were all kind of like, oh, it was 1969. Oh, how could she say something? You know,
do you remember what it was and what your answer was?
I don't quite remember, but I think, you know, in 1969, you know, I remember my father being very angry with me because the money I was earning, I wanted to give to actually to the American Indian. I just wanted to give my money away to he was like very angry. He said, why? What's your money? And I'm going, but I want to help people. And back then it was still, I don't know. 1969 was a funny time. But I was very fortunate because of the Miss Philadelphia pageant. I met the Glenn Miller Orchestra, the manager of the Glenn Miller Orchestra. They heard me sing somewhere. And at 19, I was whisked off to Japan and Australia and the UK and singing in front of a 17-piece big band with Buddy DeFranco, one of the world's greatest clarinetists, who, by the way, had perfect pitch. So that was a lot of fun. And he made me very paranoid about pitch. And my kids all sing pretty center pitch because of Buddy. I had wonderful opportunities. It seems that every time a door opened, even if it wasn't the most comfortable place to be, it seemed like something else opened up that was wonderful. So I've been very very blessed. Really.
Now, you mentors or teachers when you were in school that really inspired you that are still resonating through you to this day?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all of my teachers. My first voice teacher was Mario Lanza's first voice teacher.
Wow.
So she was in her early 90s in Philadelphia when I saw Miss Williams, and she was like edgy in early 90s. She was awesome. And of course, Carmine Gagliardi, I'm sure many of your listeners, if you're singers and studied voice in the early 70s in New York, Carmine was just, Evita came from Carmine. I didn't know anything about Evita. I was living on the West Coast and I came for a voice lesson. I had started with him at about when I was around 20 and I came back to him and he called Hal Prince from a voice lesson and said, Hal, got to hear this girl. And I'm in the finals of Evita and I didn't even know it was going on. So that our teachers are so, they're the family members, I think, our mentors that we weren't born to, the ones that take us under the wing. And I have to honestly tell you, there was not a time that I went on stage with Evita that I did not look up or down, depending on which teacher it was. Really up, let's say up. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, because of nerves. And I would just say, please, please, please be with me, along with my grandmother and, you know, family relatives that I asked them to just take that journey with me as I walk on stage nervous, and it calmed me.
So what moment in your life when you decided that this was the career path that you wanted to take?
Where the mentoring path?
So as an entertainer.
Oh, well, my father was a child performer in vaudeville and worked with Al Jolson and Eddie Cantor. So I kind of grew up with that, although he did not like the industry. And my grandmother was a vocal coach and played incredible piano. And she actually had a USO show with kids where they went to hospitals and did things for the Veterans Hospital. So I grew up where other kids would go to their grandparents and bake cookies. My grandmother was giving me a voice lesson. And I mean, I was in diapers. So that's a little weird. Because I remember standing there, like, singing Ain't She Sweet. She taught me Ain't She Sweet. So I grew up in it, and I found solace in music. I had an incident at a very young age where I was actually bedridden, and I was in a wheelchair for a couple years. And I did not have a TV in the room, and I did not have a radio, but I had a record player. And I had two albums, and I had West Side Story, and I had Music Man. And I would play them over and over and over, and all I wanted to do was sing like Marnie Nixon and Barbara Cook. So that got me through so much. And although I had never seen a Broadway show, I was quite young, saw my first Broadway show at 13. I just had visions.
What was the first Broadway show that you saw?
Oliver. My mother took me to New York for my 13th birthday to see Oliver. And I find this could kind of answer your question a little bit. We had balcony seats. There wasn't a lot of money in my family. My father was a hard worker, but we had balcony seats. And I remember seeing the kids on the stage, and I remember crying because I wanted to do that. And my mother took me to the Empire State Building the next day, and I looked at New York. I'd never been there, and I said, I'm going to live here one day. And of course I did. But I was 13 too. So isn't that interesting that 13 was kind of like a hallmark for you? And I have a lot of students that are 13. And I remember being them.
At that age. But you got your equity card with the national tour of you were doing Company.
It was actually the Goober Gross tour, but we had people like Carolyn Kirsch was in it, who was a Broadway baby. Mm-hmm. And it was the first company of Company from after Company closed. We were the first Company out, and Michael Bennett came to Westbury Music Fair. Dan Soretta was our choreographer, and Jerry Adler, who went on to acting, was our director. Mm. And it was with Vivian Blaine and George Maharis.
Who, by the way, I got a message for you tonight. He's doing very well. He's in Beverly Hills, and he sends you his love. So,
oh my goodness, you spoke to George?
No, I didn't. It's through other channels.
But
my editor has been corresponding with him. So,
that's so wonderful. He, though, he did something funny during the show. We had a cast party at my parents' house in New Jersey, South New Jersey, after a show. And my mother made this amazing cheesecake. Amazing. And every show he would ad lib and he'd go, "Oh, Susan, by the way, I loved your mother's cheesecake." Every show. And it was like, why is he doing that? And that was like the thing, the running thing all summer long was my mother had to make him a cheesecake after that. But
no, but you were on tour with that show. And of course you toured throughout Europe and Japan. And do you love or did you enjoy at that time being on the road?
No, not at all. I love the audiences. I love the music, but I'm kind of a homebody. Mm-hmm. I love home. And so being in strange rooms and it can be very lonely. You know, you make friends, but if you are, how do I put this? A little old fashioned in some ways. It could be a little bit lonely on the road, you know, missing family. But on the other hand, when you get out on stage and it's your audience and you want to share, it's not about you. It's not about, oh, aren't I great? And don't I say, it's about what can I share from my heart to you and connect. It's really special. And so it's worth it. I don't like flying. I'm really a homebody. So I don't know if show business was the right career in a way, but I'm so happy that I'm able to.
But you obviously, because of the work you're doing now, you obviously still have that passion that you want to share this with other kids and bring them into this world. So what was it that you loved the most about it? And what were some of the things that you were not that happy about at the time?
About being on the road or
about the business itself.
Well, I was pretty lucky again. I didn't run into too much of that dirty stuff because, you know, Broadway, and if anything, if I think about, let's say the big band, I mean, I'm still very close with a lot of the people on that band. They're my brothers, my uncles. It was funny because I came from, my father was very overprotective and strict. Like when everybody was dating and going in cars, I wasn't allowed. My daughter still laughs because I didn't even know there were cast parties after a school show because nobody asked me because they knew I wasn't going to be allowed to go. So when I got with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, and it's funny because we had three different sections. The front of the bus were the younger guys from Berkeley and from Eastman. And then the center of the bus, it was more the middle-aged people. And then the back of the bus, we had people who worked with Charlie Parker, who wouldn't dare talk to me because, you know, I was this young girl singer. But what happened was I thought, oh, yay, I am free. I am going to have a great time. Well, I wound up with a bunch of uncles and brothers and fathers and who's talking to Joy and who is that? And they would go over to somebody and they go, who are you? And, you know, that's our girl singer. And I wound up, it was like, guys, would you leave me alone? Like, hello? But it was very, and I'm still very close with these people.
Did you have a chaperone that traveled with you?
Hmm?
Did you have a chaperone that traveled with you?
No, well, Buddy DeFranco's wife, Joyce DeFranco, traveled, and I just spoke with Joyce 2 weeks ago. She's still one of my dearest, another February person, February 14th, and Buddy was February also. She was like an older sister, and the road manager's wife and I were very, very close, Nancy Bars. It becomes a family. I mean, I didn't like every guy that was in that band. I'm not trying to be a Pollyanna. I mean, it was, some of them were a little bit trying to get with the girl singer, but the road manager, Richie Bars, he made sure that they stayed in their place. So it all turned out okay. But I was with Evita for 2.5 years. So that company, the National, and Anthony Crivello was our Che. He was the understudy. I was the alternate. So we go back to 19, 80, and I just started teaching his daughter voice. I'm so honored, and she's adorable and very talented. And
I never like to go in the direction of being political on these shows, and I'm not going to get political now.
I know where you're going.
You know where I'm going. You had the experience of singing for four presidents.
Yes.
I have, name the four presidents, and then I've got a very special picture that you have to explain this.
I do. I really do. Yes. So let's see. The first president was President Nixon for the POW dinner in 1974. And it was right when Watergate was breaking. And I was pretty young, so I was still kind of like, huh, what? You know, I mean, back then I wasn't thinking about it. And for me, it was like, oh, we have a gig at the White House. But it was very special. I mean, I got to meet Sammy Davis Jr. And I became friends with Vic Damone. Oh, my goodness. Look at this picture. Is this crazy? So on the left is Phyllis Diller.
Joey Henderson.
I'm between Phyllis and Joey. That's me in the flowered dress. President Nixon, are you ready for this one, Richard? Irving Berlin sang God Bless America. It was amazing. Sammy Davis Jr., Pat Nixon, and Bob Hope.
And do you know what I love about beyond the cachet on that stage are the dresses that you're all wearing? I just love this.
Well, my dress, because I was on the road, I was able to roll it up in a suitcase. It was, you know, like it was the fabric where you can just roll it up and you can wash it out in the sink, hang it up. And
now, was that the first time that you had been to the White House?
Yes. Yes.
And the other three times that you came back, was it like old hat or way back to the White House?
They weren't all at the White House. The next president was, George Bush Sr. and Barbara Bush. And I think you have the picture at the National Theater. He was vice president at the time. And when we finished the show, President Bush and Barbara came back. And Mrs. Bush, shouldn't call her Barbara, came backstage and spoke to the cast. And I'm standing there in a in my gown that I just dyed at the last scene, not too glamorous, with my makeup all mascara.
I wasn't able to format it for the screen. So that's okay. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get it on tonight.
The next president was, I think it was at the Clinton inauguration, the first inauguration. I was asked to go to the second, and I said, no, thank you. I was a little kind of like not happy with some of his behavior, but who am I to judge? And then the last was for, this was a wonderful experience. This was not at the White House. It was at the Walnut Street Theater for President Jimmy Carter. He got his Libertarian Award. It was amazing. And Ben Vereen was the host, and I got to sing Somewhere with piano and cello. It was beautiful. And in this beautiful white gown, and in the background, they had a film of the Habitat for the Homeless, of them building the homes and singing Somewhere, the lyrics to that, while this is going on, while people are building homes for people. I'm gonna cry, I'm sorry, I get a little emotional. And just the piano, cello, kind of counterpoint with the voice. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those magical moments because it meant so much to me. And the song meant so much to me too, being also from West Side Story. And Mrs. Carter, we all had a dinner afterwards at the Adelphia, I forget how to say it. I think it's the Adelphia Hotel. And Ben Vereen and I did a duet there with a laser show, which was crazy. And Mrs. Carter came over to me and she told me that the entire row was crying. So, you know, like you try to, as a teacher, explain to students how it's not about you. Mm-hmm. That once you have your technique and you just use your technique to tell that story, how you can really connect with the audience and you become just this one human group of people sharing an emotional experience. So that was, I think, my favorite. Plus, I love Jimmy Carter. Favorite and special experience. And the Walnut Street Theater. Oh, the sound system was
great. Great theater.
Loved it.
Now, you also are one of my favorite entertainers, and I've got this Playbill program here.
Oh, yes, to be skinny again.
Oh, please, you're even more beautiful now.
Oh, I mean, you're so sweet.
No, you're like a fine wine. You're gorgeous.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I love this program.
Isn't that? Now, let me tell you how I got this program, because I lost just about every picture I ever had from everything in a flood. David Michael Frank, who was quite the composer, was my arranger at the time. I had, I don't know, I think I had 19-piece orchestrations with strings for Red Skelton. I mean, it was a wonderful, wonderful venue and experience. David and I are still in touch, and David said he found it one day in a box in the basement, and he sent me a picture of the cover, the back cover, and that's why I have that. But oh, had a funny experience.
From your perspective, that you can relate to your students as well. But when you open for an iconic star like Red Skelton,
yes.
And I've spoken to other entertainers that have opened for big names as well, mm-hmm. Let's face it, the audience is not there necessarily to see you. They
right.
want to see Red Skelton. That's mm-hmm. what they want tickets for. Mm-hmm. From your own perspective, did you enjoy opening for Red Skelton? And what was the experience like for you overall, knowing that you had that mantle on your shoulders?
I didn't see it as that way. I don't know why. I guess because at that point, I think I was maybe 25 or 20. I had been a professional performer for quite a while, so it was my job. I was booked. And Red didn't know me. He actually came into my dressing room. We were in Portland to introduce himself. And he said to me, I hear you're a Philly girl. And I said, yes. And he said, I worked the Earl Theater in Philadelphia. And I said, my dad won the Sonny Boy contest there when he was a little boy for the Al Jolson movie, Sonny Boy. And the Earl Theater was no longer there. So we were talking about that. He said, what was your father's name? And I said, Joey Lober. He said, I think I remember that kid. And so we kind of just talked as a professional to a professional, but I'll tell you something he did for me. Talk about mentoring. We had our run through in the afternoon. We had the rehearsal with the orchestra. And I came off stage after my 20 minutes. And he said, Joy, he said, I want to talk to you about something. And I said, what? He said, I got to teach you how to bow. And I said, okay. And he said, you got to bow with humility. He said, you don't just take a bow. Thank you. No, he said, he says, watch me bow. And he took me by, he said, and it's sort of like that. And he basically was mentoring me because he knew I was a kid. He knew, I mean, back then 23, 24 was a little different than today. You know, we didn't have the internet and maybe it was just me, but he really did take me under his wing that way. And he called me kid, you know? Hey, kid.
What a valuable lesson to get from this man. I mean, so many people don't think about this. When I'm in the theater and the artist on stage, and I call them artist, are taking their bow and people are making their beeline to get to the door, every bit of my body cringes over that because it's so disrespectful to the artist on the stage. And it's true. I mean, the audience has spent an hour, 2 hours, ever how long it is, to be in your presence, to show your appreciation to the audience. It's not about I did a job. Look at me. It once again is about the audience.
Yes. And I had never thought of anything like that because I always just wanted to get off stage as soon as I could because I'm a singer and it wasn't, I enjoyed curtain calls and things like that, but I always found them a little embarrassing. I mean, I don't know why, because it's like, I'm not doing it for that reason. It was an amazing experience working with Red. It really was. I mean, I told you, I've had some blessings and
amazing blessings. I want to ask you, Joey, with everything that has happened in your career, were you very proactive in pursuing these things, or were they opportunities that were happening that were like stepping stones in your career?
I was a runaway bride with my career. Every time I was approached, it seems like when I first moved to Los Angeles, Willard Alexander, who was he's legendary with the big bands, with Count Basie, Buddy Rich, Maynard Ferguson, Duke Ellington, Woody Herman, the Glenn Miller Orchestra, Dorsey. I was the kid. I was like one of the only girl singers, except my girlfriend, Renee Armand, who sang at one time with Woody Herman. And so he was kind of like an uncle. And when I moved to Los Angeles, he had everybody in the world call me, Quincy Jones and George Romanes and all these amazing people. And Joy is in town and, you know, and the owner I was just talking to Jeff Gans about this the other day, the owner of, I keep saying Sun Studio, but it's not Sun Studio, it's a different one. I was shown around and it was overwhelming to me. And at one point, Burt Bacharach had gotten a demo tape because I was writing songs with me singing on it. And Bobby Russell and he were writing together and contacted me about recording with them. And this is where mentoring comes in. I was in Los Angeles all by myself at 23 years old. And I had been with the band, but I had people around me that I knew, but I was all by myself for kind of the first time. And I got really scared. There was a little thing on my shoulder that said, oh, they're going to find out that I really can't sing, or I'll get in the studio and they're going to hear, and all that self-doubt and the mentors, which wasn't true. I obviously was okay. They heard it. There wasn't tuning. Nobody was tuning back then. It was me. And had I had a mentor, my agent was still in New York, Peggy Grant. So I would call Peggy all the time, but Peggy couldn't be there for me. Mm-hmm. My acting teacher, Gail Kobe, and Jeff, who was with Jeff Corey, she became a mentor. But I felt very intimidated. I felt like, well, maybe they're going to find out that I'm like a total fraud. Mm-hmm. You know, and here I studied opera and all that. And then I would sing and I'd hear myself and I go, no, I am okay. And I ran from Burt reaching out to me. And then years later, I regretted it and went to Valley Forge Music Fair with my mother and said, maybe I can resurrect this, you know? And Burt Bacharach said to my mother, well, Joy just wasn't interested. And I think had I had a mentor or someone who just, you know, worked with me a little more and I had a little more confidence, I think that once I had my job and I got on stage, I had confidence, but it was getting to that point.
Now, your focus right now is on all of this.
Yes.
How did the Broadway Mentors program actually get started?
Well, I had gone through some personal issues with a divorce. I'll just let that go there. And my life just felt very kind of like surreal after 21 years of being married and raising a daughter. And I needed to get back to work. And I got an agent right away in New York. And then I realized I don't want to do 8 shows a week and I don't want to go on the road and I want to spend time with my daughter. And I had two very dear friends of mine who were pretty established in the industry who said, Joy, if you're not going to perform, you really need to be teaching because of all the experience. And so I started teaching. And in that teaching, I started thinking about what would I want if I were a kid and I went to see a Broadway show. Wouldn't it be great to have that person in a room with me, with a small group of people teaching me, and knowing them and getting to know them? And it just started that way. I didn't know about Richard. I didn't know about any other programs that were going on. And what had happened was I took a class, which I had never done before, a kind of a master class in New York City at HB with Donna McKechnie, just because I wanted to get my toe back in the water. I needed to get to work. And I had seen Donna do A Chorus Line in the 70s and the 80s and adored her. And I could not believe I was sitting in the same room with 15 or 20 people with Donna McKechnie. And I stood up and sang for Donna. And she is the most generous, generous, wonderful.
Amen. She's the real thing.
I adore her. And I was completely starstruck, of course. You know, I was like, oh. And I thought, wouldn't it be, not everybody has the opportunity to go to New York City and live 50 miles away. What about people in Indiana? What about the kids that are in, you know, the Dakotas? They don't have that opportunity. So
excuse me for interrupting. Right now, we are forced to do this virtually, but was your goal and your plan always, even before the pandemic,
to do
it this way?
Yes. Alice Ripley just wrote me in a text. She said, Joy, you were so ahead of your time. She just, I could show you the text. But in the meantime, I started the program with a little studio that I barely could afford. Mary Sugarman knows about it because I was buying two chairs at a time at Costco until I could get it going after the divorce. And in a very short period of time, within 5 years, we had Donna McKechnie down for a masterclass. We had Emily Skinner. We had Anthony Crivello in for 5 days. We had Alice Ripley twice at that studio, Katie Huffman. Oh my gosh, we had so many wonderful people, and our classes are small. We don't do the 30, 50 students. We do 10, 12. Sometimes there's less for 2.5 hours. So everybody gets a really good time with the mentor and to ask questions and all of that. And sometimes we'll just do them in New York City, like Danny Burstein said, Joy, can we do one in the city? And Randy Graff did one in the city. We did have, this is funny, Anthony Rapp was one of our first mentors to come down. And I know Anthony since he's 9 because he was in our company of Evita as a 9-year-old.
Yes.
So it was really kind of cute because when he came down, I could still see him looking at me like, oh, it's Evita. You know, I was a grown up, he was a kid. And
I mean, you could have called this the Broadway Teachers Program. It's going to sound like a simple question, but for some that may not know, what do you differentiate between a teacher and a mentor?
Oh, there's a big difference. A teacher will teach technique. A teacher will teach you. A mentor will wrap their arms around you, figuratively. Or, you know, I'll have students now, voice students, who will come in and they're just not quite making it. I don't know what's going on, and the pitch is going here, and then I stop them and I go, what's going on? Before we go any further, what's going on? Oh, I've got these tests and, you know, and the blah, 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 blah. And I got yelled, I broke my phone and my parents are mad at me and blah, blah, blah. And once we get that over with, and I will say things to them. I mean, I get in trouble, but I go, did you have breakfast? Did you take a vitamin today if your parents are okay with it? Oh, I didn't have time. You didn't have time. You didn't have time to nurture your body. And because being an entertainer, this is our instrument. We have to be an athlete. We have to be eating right. We have to be trying to sleep right. I talk to them about all of that. But once you get past that, then all of a sudden they're land in the notes because it's off their shoulders. So to me, being a mentor is about taking the student, and it's an organic situation. It's your mind, it's your body, it's your spirit. It's your values. I always tell the kids, don't perform, never perform. get in touch with your story, get in touch with your heart. The mentors all do that. All my mentors, I handpick them. We have similar feelings. You get in touch with your heart. Yes, you have to work with your technique. Yes, you have to think of your breathing. Yes, you have to think of where you're placing your notes. Yes, you have to think of where.
I was thinking about preparing for tonight's interview, and a lot. I mean, obviously, you're focused on children, but there are a lot. No, but I was going to say maybe I'm wrong on this, but there are a lot of people where life got in the way, and yes. They, you know, they got married, they were in long marriages, divorce. Partners passing away. Mm-hmm. And in the back of their mind, they've gone. I was talking to someone the other day, and she's like, I always wanted to be an actress. And I said, well, what's stopping you?
Yeah.
Do you have groups for that?
I have many adult students, and we do masterclass with adults. Many. And exactly with what you're talking about. And I actually, I relate to the kids a little differently. But with the adults, there's just like this, you know, and it's very similar. I have parents, adults who come where they said, well, this is going to be a hobby, but it was my dream. And I go for it. Mm-hmm. Go for it. Why not? If this is. And I love teaching the adults, because when we do master classes in the studio, we do two separate ones. We do up to a certain age, up to age, like, let's say 14. And then we do, let's say, 15 through adult. And we have people in their 60s. We have people in their 50s, all of it. And Richard, here's the thing about being an artist, and see how you feel about this. Because we're basically kids. Like, I feel like I'm 5 years old sometimes. You know, and sometimes I feel like I'm 16. And if I don't go near a mirror, I am 16. You know, I just avoid the mirror thing. And that's where I am. Because our souls are the artist's soul is a very it lives in spring. Mm-hmm. I think our souls live in spring, where things bloom, rather than thinking of this is the winter of my life. I was just thinking about it the other night. I was going, this is the winter of my life, because I'm going to be 70 in February, and I don't mind saying it because I worked hard to get here.
I'm right there with you.
Well, you're a baby, you're so much younger. But I have friends, high school friends, that all they do is look backwards. Their lives are now in a rear view vision mirror. You asked me a question earlier about how am I doing. I get up every day excited about what can we do now.
One of the things that I do a lot this year, I can't wait to get my life back. And I say to people, this is your life. This is it. This is what we've got right now. None of us are promised tomorrow. You know, I want to go here. Excuse me, everyone. The theater, we just lost Anne Reinking, who, oh my God. Oh,
I just have chills. I'm just.
And, you know, and she died in her sleep. But she went to bed that night. As someone said, I hope that she went with a beautiful dream. And that's the hope that I have. But. We are not promised tomorrow, and especially with what we're going through, I think now is the time to take advantage of this. I can't believe this. We are at the end of our show.
And I didn't even talk about mentors.
This is what I want to talk about. I want to let everyone know that the Broadway Mentors Program, go to the website. I'm going to be posting things on my website, on my pages, everywhere, to let everyone know. And you know how I feel about you. I'm going to be pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. I think that what you do is just amazing. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. If you enjoyed the show, and I hope you did, and we're going to have you back, Joey. Please come back.
Oh, no. The stress.
But if you enjoyed the show, please go to my website, which is richardskipper.com. Sign my guest book with your thoughts about the evening. That helps to boost me in other markets. And it also lets people know about the Broadway Mentors Program. I also end every show by telling everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. The Broadway Mentors Foundation has just been started. So, and it is the holidays and everyone's, but just a few dollars will help. And it goes a long way.
Yes.
And if you are able to do so, all of us know that there is that person out there in our lives who has always had the dream of being in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of a better gift this holiday season than to get them involved with the Broadway Mentors program. So if you're able to do that as a gift, please, by all means, do so.
We have gift certificates.
And gift certificates. And I'm going to get a gift certificate and give it to someone now that you mentioned that. And what I, you know, I always end the show by letting our guest have the final word. Anything you want to say about anything that we talked about tonight that you want to expound upon, anything that we didn't mention that you wish that we had, or just any message that you want to put out to everyone who's watching at this time. Joy Lober, thank you for the gift that you've given to the world and that you're going to continue to give.
Thank you. I've been crying. My contacts are going to fall out.
No, it's just
am I supposed to say something or?
Yeah, say anything that's on your mind.
Okay. I just want to, I wish I could reach out to every one of you. Thank you for giving me your time. I wish I could meet each one of you. Again, this wasn't supposed to be about me and kind of got off onto a tangent. I apologize for that. But there are two programs, the Broadway Mentors program, where people can do one-on-one classes with a Donna McKechnie or a Howard McGillin or Ron Bohmer or Anastasia Bars, on and on. It not only is great for you, but it is also great for the mentors because they're not working in the theater. So we're supporting one another. It's a true support situation. We did just start the foundation for those people who may never have the opportunity to do something like this. I'm going to be reaching out to some foster care situations. There are talented people out there, talented kids. It could be a life changer. And the donations are what is going to help them be able to take these classes and the master classes. I want to wish you all a happy and very healthy holiday. Please stay vigilant. Wear a mask, please. And I wear gloves too. And just be healthy. And I hope I hear from some of you. And if you have any questions, I'm accessible at joy@broadwaymentorsprogram.com. Thank you, Richard Skipper, not just for this interview and for the kids and the adults for helping to fulfill people's dreams, but for what you're doing for everyone. Your program is beyond special, and you are too. And I'm so glad you and I've become friends this year. So
there
you go, another blessing. And I want to thank my daughter, Tracy Anderson, who put the video together. She does the website. This is a mother-daughter business, by the way. She is incredible. And I thank her, and I love you, honey. And thank you, Richard. I don't even know what to say. Oh, I said too much.
Happy holidays. I love you.
You too. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Bye.